This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Another edition of Sharp Money here from VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Amal Shaw is here. Dustin Sweetelson is here. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick Maher, the vacationing Patrick Maher. And Amal, I was told by our producer, Dustin Sweetelson, we're doing 3 hours of live Wimbledon talk. You ready for this, man?
I am. It's my understanding, Dustin said, if we decided to proceed with that, we won't be back tomorrow. So now let me ask you, Dustin, does that pass out the entirety of our contract?
No, I believe it's a breach of contract to bore people intentionally.
A breach.
Great. So we'll talk about the NFC South some more.
Dustin, a guy who loves smoked meats, and yet he refuses to turn on the Wimbledon. He told me that this morning. I'm like, Dustin, how do you – come on, man.
There's so many matches. How do you keep up with it?
First of all, it's like the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament, right, Ben?
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
Thursday to Sunday, the first weekend is great, and then afterwards
the vibe around Vegas, too, betting on it, is definitely the same.
Well, it's better than these soccer losers that these guys are betting every day when they bet, over 3.5 goals and it's a nil-nil draw.
Hey, here's what I'll say. It's not my thing. I won't watch it. But if you guys have a bet for tomorrow, I'm in.
I will have a few for you by the end of the day.
I surely will as well. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yeah. We'll make Dustin happy. We don't want him. He had I'm sure he had an eventful 4th of July. He doesn't need to be, emotional anymore.
My MLB The Show team on PS5 won the World Series last night, so we're out celebrating.
Are you still 14? I mean, I haven't played MLB The Show since high school. I thought you kind of moved on. After.
Yeah. Do you have friends though? Because I don't.
I mean, not really. And I still found a way to turn into a real adult. We're off and running on the show today. We have some great guests coming up. Yaron Weitzman will join us for a Fox Sports NBA writer. He'll join us at 4:30 on the East Coast to talk some NBA and free agency. And that's where we'll start them all, not only in the free agency realm here, but because of some of these trade requests that have been made. But Yaron Weitzman will be our first guest coming up later on the show. Brad Ausmus, former major league manager, longtime big leaguer, will join us to discuss the latest going on with Shohei Ohtani and the LA Angels at 4:45 on the East Coast. Scott Spritzer from DocSports.com, our pal, will stop by. He's got some MLB and some NFL win totals. That's at 5:00 on the East Coast. But the latest, at least from the NBA perspective, Amal, you have the Mark Spears report that comes out on ESPN talking Damian Lillard, Portland Trailblazers, and it's about the teams he wants to go to. And it just fascinates me from the perspective that Lillard has said, all right, I want to go to Miami, and the odds reflect that. He's minus 500 to go to Miami as his next team. And yet we're kind of in this era now where teams are starting to almost—it's like a game of chicken almost. Where because of how these stars have leveraged their power so much, I wonder at what point, Amal, does the fulcrum flip and it kind of tips the scale to the other side, where teams go, you know what, we don't have to trade you and give you exactly what you want. There's not a lot of loyalty. This is a business, so we're going to hold out. We're going to find the best opportunity for you. And I wonder if we eventually get there with Lillard, because it's not like Miami can offer Portland a king's ransom for him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So one of the most important things looking at a trade in the NBA is matching up the salaries. And Tyler Hero would be a guy potentially there at $27 million. By the way, how the hell is Duncan Robinson making $18 million next year? I mean, I don't get depressed by much. That's depressing. So you're going to need a comparable salary to go along with Tyler Hero. And Ben, you're absolutely right. I don't understand this conversation surrounding the fact that there's talk about, well, he wants to go here, he wants to go there. Look, he should be fortunate enough that Portland's willing to move on from him potentially if he doesn't want to be here. And if I'm the Portland Trailblazers and Joe Cronin, the general manager, I'm making a decision that's in the best interest of the Blazers. I love what they potentially have in their backcourt with Shaedon Sharpe at the two guard, and then, of course, Scoot Henderson at the one. This team has got a good cornerstone to build upon. We saw the impact that we down the road a little bit in Sacramento. You've got the Kings with De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis building a good nucleus there. You can put these types of pieces in place. Go get one big man. And now all of a sudden this team becomes a threat in 3-4 years in the Western Conference. I just don't think they need to concern themselves about what Damian Lillard wants. If you can appease him and make it work, fantastic. But at the end of the day, they have to do what's best for the Blazers and their fan base.
And it's weird that in the sense that the James Harden situation and his three different trade requests over 4 years and holding respective teams hostage, you have to know, right, Amal? Teams are taking notice of that. They look at what Harden has done, completely screwing their cap situation, completely screwing their immediate future, and going, all right, as much as we love somebody who has been loyal to a small market, we can't allow that to happen. I mean, you're signing a death warrant if you let somebody do the same thing, walk in, sign an extension, and then turn right around and go, oh, yeah, I want to be traded. I'm out of here. You just can't do it anymore.
Well, I find it so fascinating in sports when so many teams hold the leverage against a player and they don't use that leverage. But my God, will they nickel and dime to death their $40,000 a year employees? It's truly unbelievable. There's so many scenarios that I've seen over the years in sports. I go, you know what? It goes to show me that half these owners in sports got lucky in one business idea, and then they were fortunate enough to buy a team because they're too stupid to really survive. I mean, like Bisciotti, when they won the Super Bowl in Baltimore and Joe Flacco won it, I would have said, listen, Joe, thanks. Because it was, I forgot if it was Raheem Moore or Raheem Brock who misplayed the ball for the Denver Broncos.
Raheem Moore, yes.
Thank you. I would have said, listen, Joe, just because you got lucky on a throw, we're not giving you $100 million and strapping ourselves in with a bad cap. The Arizona Cardinals did it with Kyler Murray. How many more bad decisions do you need to see teams continuously make before you wake up and say, this is idiotic?
It's pretty simple when you look at it that way. I believe, fun fact, that was, I might be mistaken, I'm pretty sure that was Dan Dierdorf's final broadcast, was the Raheem Moore game.
I don't know. I don't worry about people that went to Michigan.
I thought you would appreciate that nugget there. But the exact quote from Mark Spears was, he said, I've been told since Saturday multiple times that Damian Lillard wants to go to Miami and Miami only. He doesn't have a no trade clause of all. So it's not like there's all this red tape to wade through and they've got to find the perfect match. It's really not that. And I look at what's going on in Philly and say, all right, you know, Daryl Morey, he has history with this as a GM, not acquiescing immediately to Ben Simmons' demands and waiting to find a trade package he at least was fine with. I see the same thing happening with James Harden. And you could find, I could see a situation where you end up with a three-team trade where you see Lillard go to Philadelphia, which is 10-1 on the odds board, by the way. You see Harden go to a third team, and Portland just gets a crap ton of first-round picks back and some useful pieces they can build around.
Yeah, it's probably a realistic scenario. I just don't know how it's going to play out, what team's availability is there. What's interesting to me is the Boston Celtics at plus 550. Mm. How do they make it work with the salary cap? I don't even understand that. At some point in time, we already complained about Phoenix only being able to have seven guys. Dustin, how does Boston make this work?
Because they get rid of Jaylen Brown.
And that's the thing, right? We keep waiting for the extension to come. It hasn't. And now it's sort of like we're past July 4th. Crickets. Well, more crickets. I mean, that's you're right, Dustin. I mean, that's the big thing.
But I don't need to sign Jaylen Brown just yet. See, to me in basketball, why sign a guy like Jaylen Brown? Jaylen Brown's a very nice player. He's not a top 20 player. So why are you in such a rush to sign him to such a long-term extension? I think you can sit there and let the season play out, and then you determine how much money you're going to potentially waste on him.
I mean, I understand from that point because, well, and again, Miami, by the way, minus 300. I think I said minus 500 earlier. In what world should Boston, after the coaching issues they showed, in what world should they be as we enter this whole process, assuming they do not land Damian Lillard and they're the second favorite here at plus 550? In what world should Boston be basically 2-1 with a head coach in Joe Mazzulla who has no idea how to make in-game adjustments or in-series adjustments?
Because even though everybody wants to point to coaching in the NBA, I think the reality of it is that in the NBA, if you have the best rosters, you can win. I get Phil Jackson gets a ton of credit for 11 championships, but you know what? He had, for six of those championships, he had the greatest player of all time, and he had one of the greatest individual talents and the most dominant player I've ever seen in my lifetime in Shaquille O'Neal. And so I think what gets overlooked is, and I'm a Popovich fan, but you know what? This guy had Tim Duncan. You look at, you know, Eric Spoelstra had LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh all in their prime. I'm not taking anything, or I'm not trying to defend Joe Mazzulla, but when you factor in Boston would have potentially a starting lineup, or, you know, you have White as your number five guy, in essence. You've got Porzingis and Robert Williams, along with Brown and Tatum. Let me tell you, Joe Mazzulla can't screw that up.
That's, I mean, you could make that case, but at the same time, they still lost at home as a, what, 8.5-point favorite in a game seven to a Miami team where they had the advantage in?
The only thing I object to is you mentioning the point spread, because just because the odds makers don't realize Miami's a good team, that's Boston's fault. The bottom line is, though, this team with Boston, Jason Tatum was hot one day, cold the next. They were highly inconsistent. I think this team would be better next year in the postseason. And you know what, Miami, you go back to that series against Milwaukee, they couldn't miss from the three-point line. There were games where you're going, there's just nothing you can do. And that's the great thing about basketball and the NCAA tournament in particular. On one given day, anybody who shoots at an elite level can beat anybody.
Well, and that's why I look at Milwaukee as the second choice right now in the East. And yeah, I say, okay, if you're really doing the roster comparison, and there were some people that thought Milwaukee was maybe ready to blow things up around the core of Giannis Antetokounmpo, where Chris Middleton ends up eventually getting re-signed. They had to pay a pretty exorbitant tax to bring back Brooke Lopez, but The fact that they brought those two pieces, if Middleton's fully healthy, if you get Drew Holiday's confidence back playing at an all-star level again as a super underrated defensive player, that's a roster I would put up square against the Celtics any day.
Well, I would agree with you there. And by the way, for full disclosure, Ben Wilson is from Milwaukee.
Thank you, Amal. Thank you.
But anyway, the reality.
Am I wrong, though?
No, you're not wrong, but I don't want to give you full credit. I actually am agreeing with you. I'll tell you right now, Giannis is my bet to win the MVP next year. I am telling you, I think this guy is going to be so focused, and he's going to have a monster year because of the embarrassment of losing in the first round. The expectation in the bar in Milwaukee has been set so high. To me right now in the Eastern Conference, unless the Miami Heat acquire Damian Lillard, and I know 2 years ago they had the best record in the Eastern Conference, I think it's Boston 1 and Milwaukee 2, and it's like 1A and 1B.
I totally agree. And when you have the odds that reflect such a chasm, and we don't believe there is one, it is very, very narrow. If you are comparing the two, the Bucks, and I see right now DraftKings plus 320, much better bet to make than Boston plus 215. Missoula, by the way, co-second favorite to win Coach of the Year next year.
I forget Coach of the Year. I mean, I don't even know how you decide, right?
Like, I'm just saying.
I mean, Doc Rivers won it 1 year when the Orlando Magic didn't make the playoffs. So I'm not worried about the Coach of the Year perspective. I just think from an MVP standpoint, Giannis is going to have a monster year. You mentioned Brooke Lopez had a phenomenal year. I think of 34, 35 last year. He comes back. That's an important get for the Milwaukee Bucks. And to me, this is going to be a motivated team.
A team that had
a failure. When you look at this season, they could have beaten any of these teams to win the NBA title.
Yet Miami gets hot from beyond the arc for a four or five game stretch, and boom, it's over just like that. Who's right, Dustin? Me or Amal? He's kind of agreeing with me, but I
lean 51% Ben because I just think you've been nicer to me so far today.
That's a very small sample size. I don't recommend bettors doing
comment?
It. It's been 11 minutes. Anyway, we'll transition from NBA on to Major League Baseball because there are issues with the LA Angels. I mean, there always are, but there are even more now. Shohei Ohtani with a blister. We'll talk about that future's impact when we return.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Just underway on the Wednesday edition of Sharp Money. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. Amal is here. We're watching a lot of tennis right now. We've got some sweats going on. We'll talk about our favorite plays coming up as well as some futures implications. Novak Djokovic threw in straight sets up to a minus 190 favorite on the men's side, which we'll discuss here in a little bit. Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. A lot of people had a nice 4th of July, Amal. Not Angels fans, though. Tough day to be an Angels fan. Shohei Ohtani, blister. Leaves his start, not going to pitch in the All-Star game. This is right after Mike Trout breaks his hamate bone out 6 to 8 weeks. Anthony Rendon leaves the clubhouse in crutches just to make matters even worse. So, yikes. At least it wasn't a Jason Pierre-Paul, fireworks incident.
Yeah,
could have been
exactly.
Worse.
He lost a couple fingers there.
Could have been worse, I guess.
I think if you're the Angels at this point in time, and Dustin and I were talking about this, you've got to move on from Ohtani. You've got to make a trade. You've got to get something. Look, do you know what's going to look back? The Angels actually... They've had, after the World Series win in, 2002, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything has been downhill. Everything has been downhill for them since that point in time. You have arguably the greatest player of the last couple of decades in Mike Trout, and you've done nothing with his tenure there. You have one of the worst signings of all time in Albert Pujols. I can tell you one thing. They should have told Pujols to bring his sauce guy with him when he got to Anaheim. Because to me, he got right off that sauce as soon as he landed there and he signed that contract. The Rendon contract has been horrible. Then you get... The most intriguing player to me in baseball since Ichiro arrived in 2001, a guy who's must-see television. I will tell you, Shohei's amazing to watch. I've never had more fun watching a player than Ichiro. He was just absolutely electric. But Shohei's exactly like that from the pitcher's mound, from the plate. Now he's got a blister on his hand, gives up 5 runs yesterday. He's injured. To me, guys, you've got to make a move. You're not going to win anything. I understand you're still within contention, but you got to look big picture. It's time for this team to rebuild. They have a depleted farm system as is.
Yeah, 4 back of the 3rd wild card right now in the AL, 7 back of Houston. You have Houston and Texas right now. They're in the AL West. And here's what manager Phil Nevin had to say as far as how this blister actually happened last night.
My understanding, we're putting an acrylic nail on there because of where it's cracked. So, and that might have just irritated the skin on the side of the finger. Just it felt like he didn't have command of his pitches going into the 6th. We talked before he went out, and he said he felt good. He warmed up, and he gave me a thumbs up out there. But, obviously a few pitches in, when you try to get on some balls, it probably feels a little bit different, and it affected some pitches there, yeah.
Okay, acrylic nail. Dustin, you've experience with nails and... manicures, or no, is that an Amal thing?
I like when the women I date though have long nails so they can scratch my head.
Oh, so you're one of those. You're one of those guys.
I don't know what that says about me. It may be a thing. Have either of you guys ever gotten a manicure or pedicure before?
I do all the time.
All the time?
Yeah.
How often?
Probably once every 8 weeks.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I would not. My over-under would have been like one and a half times a year for you, but.
No. About half a dozen times a year.
So you think Ohtani's issues could be solved by a good manicure, maybe?
I don't know, but I can tell you one thing. I was sitting there. You guys were talking about the injury Phil Nevin mentioned. And I was sitting there. I remember I covered a game one time. Stu Barnes took a puck or a stick to the eye. His eye looks like it's going to fall out. He comes back on the ice, plays the game, does the post game. I'm standing like literally a foot and a half from him, interviewing him after the game. And I'm like, dude, there's not enough money for me to come back in this hockey game after what he went through. And these guys have a hangnail issue. And next thing you know,
when you pitch, though, your nail is digging into the ball.
I understand
different.
That. I can tell you right now, if these were hockey players, the guys would be out there.
No, because then you mess up your mechanics. You start overcompensating. You make it worse. He has to rest. What happened last night was he probably threw his splitter too much, and in the splitter you have to dig in too much behind the seams, and that irritated it. That's part of the problem. He just needs to miss his next stop in the rotation and take a break from pitching.
If it was a hockey player, he would learn how to throw a knuckleball immediately. Yes. And fire 7 shutout innings. That's probably what would happen.
By the way, the Angels might be faking the injury. They want to make the move. This is the way to tell the fans that we're making the move. I don't know, right?
I mean, come on. I like this conspiracy.
Well, you guys discussed it yesterday, yeah. And how the odds have basically halved just overnight. And you know, who would have thought he would actually have a blister injury come up in the very next start? But he's already come down now. I'm seeing him at DraftKings -800. They actually just added a prop yesterday afternoon. Ohtani versus any other player for AL MVP. Ohtani -800. Yes. Any other player, 5-1 right now.
I still think Ohtani's going to get it. I mean, what are we talking? 2 weeks max plus. Don't forget, Dustin's brought up a great point with several injuries last week. He's talked about the fact that we're going into the All-Star break. So you're going to have 5-6 days right there where you're not missing time. So a great opportunity in terms of not impacting the MVP race.
And it's just now adding on to the fact that if there is a trade market for him, could he go NL? Would he win an AL MVP even if he were to spend the second half of the year with a National League team? Or could he even win an NL award with a limited sample size despite the immaculate season Ronald Acuna is having? He's up to -350 now. I think that's the point where you supplement potential trade talks with now injury here.
Yeah, absolutely. But look, if you're the Angels, your biggest concern is the future of your franchise. You've got to make a move, and you just literally should have they should have an auction. They should say, like, you know, listen, at Anaheim, we're going to have an auction on the day of the trade deadline. Give us your best offer. It's like, you know, it's like when you go to a foreclosure, it's like the best offer, we're taking it. That's it, and call it a day.
Is it weird that I think Dustin would make a great auctioneer? Just the hoobada habada, heebada habada, hoobada.
No, because I pretend I don't see people I don't like.
Okay.
I could be bought. Like, I could if you came to me before, like, look, this guy's going to go against me. Get it to me at under this number. I will make sure it happens.
Oh, so you're just circumventing all sorts of rules. Like, there is a world in which Ohtani, let's say the offer comes from an NL team, and he goes there, and he's healthy. And like the one comp I always think of, this is the only time I can remember it. Like, I'm kind of, you know, thinking forward here. Let's say Ohtani goes to an NL team. But the 2008 CC Sabathia season, where he finishes fifth in the NL Cy Young voting in 17 starts.
Yeah.
He traded July 7th of 2008, was sixth in MVP voting, and he obviously not a two-way player, had led the league in complete games, led the league in shutouts that year in 17 starts.
Be interesting if he came over in the National League and had a phenomenal year. Let's say he went like 10-0. Was he going to be MVP in both leagues? I mean,
well, because like here's the thing. What if he goes to a team like Miami or Milwaukee, who's like right there but not quite over the top? And give them a way to you know, win their Miami won't win their division, but Miami to become a higher wild card, and then Milwaukee to run away and overtake Cincinnati for the Central. Like, if he does that, he could be in the mix. I would just hope he gets traded to the NL, one, because I have tickets on everyone behind him in the AL already, but two, maybe that would shorten up Acuna's odds a little bit because he'd have competition, and I just hammer Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Ben, if you didn't know, but Dustin's like a ticket broker.
I'm aware.
In every section. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I love, yes, when I see Dustin's tweets, and it's like I have 18 different
But they're all big odds. Like, I bet a little to win a lot.
Yeah. I don't hate it. I mean, the thing, too, now is – like now that that price or that that option is up in some of these markets, like Ohtani versus anybody else, is it more bang for your buck to try to pick your way through the rest of the list there, or just say, all right, you know what, 5-1, that's enough value? Because I would want more than 5-1 if I was betting on any other player versus Ohtani in that AL market. I just don't feel like it's worth it.
I would target people. I would, yeah. Like Bo Bichette's a guy I bet 70-1 before the season started. He's still 65-1. Amal and I keep talking about it.
40-1 now, draft.
Yeah, how Ohtani just killed my ticket on Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette is having an MVP caliber year across the board. Like, this would play in any era as an elite season, yeah. But no one's caring about it because of Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He's absolutely right about that. And when you look at some of these bets, I think right now the market's gotten out of whack in some of these situations. It's hard to bet on Acuna because even though at -320 he's going to win this, I think the one concern you have is the injury area. And Acuna did get banged up a little bit recently, so that's always an area that you're looking at from a futures market. But I'm going to tell you one bet that I just saw right now that looks pretty intriguing to me. The Seattle Mariners at 14-1 to win the American League West. This is the team that got hot last year in July. They've won the first two games of their three-game set in San Francisco, scoring 6 runs in each game. They have the pitching. They're capable. And they're only 7 back in the loss column, Ben. I think this is a team that's got a potential to make a run. I'm not saying that they will, but if you're looking for long odds on something that's not unrealistic, I think the Mariners are a possibility. Sometimes when you see some of these odds on teams, they're just so skewed in such a way that it becomes a bet that's not one you really want to take or make. Like right now, the Astros at 1-1 or the Rangers at +120, not that intriguing. But the M's, I mean, look, they could have a week like the Reds did, win 10, 11 in a row, and then you have the Astros and the Rangers go 5-5 in that week. Next thing you know, your odds are probably going to be +250. You can bet the other side and lock in a profit.
Remaining strength of schedule for the rest of the year, Seattle with the tied for seventh easiest schedule the rest of the way. Not, you know, this is usually the time of year where you start to look at that because we have half a season of data on it. I mean, Paul Sewald they found is a lockdown closer who has been great for them this year, and we've talked about from the start, pieces have been there. And it's one of those things you kind of have been waiting for them to turn it around, but it's not like they have all sorts of, you know, managerial player issues in the clubhouse. It's just been things haven't clicked so far, and those are the types of teams I always look to potentially explode in the second half.
Well, if you look at the odds right now, the Mariners are actually a shorter favorite to win the division than the Angels are. They're still a dangerous team, and I have to tell you right now, when you look at the postseason standings at this point, you see the Rangers, Astros, two contenders. The American League Central you can throw out. And then at the American League East, you see 4 teams potentially getting into the postseason out of that division. So whichever ones you think can get in, I think betting a futures on the American League is a great play right now because I don't think Tampa is nearly what we saw when they started in April.
You have to assume that is going to come down at least 2 degrees back to earth. By the way, Seattle, look, 5 back in the wild card. You can get +360 on them. I don't hate that either just to make the playoffs. We will transition to our favorite topic of these 3 hours. It's Wimbledon. Amal and I discuss next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It's always football season here at VSIN, which is why we've just released our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and get your newly released NFL betting guide, or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. Sign up today at VSIN.com/subscribe. Back with Dustin and Amal. I'm Ben in for Patrick today. The segment we've all been waiting for. Wimbledon, Amal. We've got finally a real day of full tennis after rain basically, neutered the first 2 days of Wimbledon down to just the main center court, court number one. We didn't get much the last couple of days. Finally, it has picked up here, even with some early rain on day 3. And what did you think of how some of these, because of the center court, number one court setup, like you have Iga Swiatek and Novak Djokovic, the two favorites in the women's and men's draw, into round 3 before like a quarter of the field even finished round 1. Very, very bizarre to me how they set that up.
Yeah, I don't personally like that. I saw a lot of the second round matches were the fifth match on so many of the outer courts today. And unfortunately, they didn't get played because there were, during some of these matches earlier this morning, there were 3 rain delays. There was one to start, then the sets started, rain delay for about 45 minutes, then another delay for like 7 to 10 minutes. So I agree with you there, Ben. It's a little bit of a problem from that standpoint. I think it gives an unfair advantage to the higher ranked players.
Completely agree.
Because you're staying on a certain time. Like I look at Alexander Šašnjević playing right now.
She's just started a match at 8:30 local time right now. Probably won't finish the match tonight. And this is a match that was supposed to be played on initially on Tuesday, and now it's going to get pushed all the way to Thursday, and they're still in the first round. Now, the one good thing is Wimbledon does take Sunday off, so it gives you an opportunity to catch up on all the matches. All the doubles matches got pushed, but I'm with you. It gives an unfair advantage already to players playing in great conditions on the indoor court. Not indoor, but where you have a roof.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it's a huge advantage.
Well, the way I look at it from the betting perspective, because there are certain quarters where, like, if you go to the men's bottom half, which started Monday, the guys who played indoors, or like you say, Maul, with the courts that had the ability to have a roof covering them, yeah. I look at a guy like a Jannik Sinner, who was about plus 150. Odds are off right now since they are still playing matches right now. There is about a half an hour, 45 minutes of daylight left at the moment there at Wimbledon. But Sinner gets through his first match, looked really, really sharp, only loses six games across three sets. You think about the guy in at least his side of the quarter, Taylor Fritz, the number nine seed, who has been, I would describe him as enigmatic this year, been very, very up and down as the nine seed. He plays Monday, has multiple rain delays, does not even play yesterday. Finally, in the fifth set, comes out today, wins in the fifth set 6-3. Yeah. So the amount of energy he had to use across multiple stop, starts, delays, all that, didn't even look particularly sharp in the first place, struggled with Hanfmann, the talented German who was unseated. But I look at that and I say Sinner has a legitimate advantage. Then he blew past Sinner did today. At least he was up early. I'm just looking at the updated number. Sinner up two sets on serve in the third right now is a huge favorite against Diego Schwartzman. So I look at a guy like Sinner and say this path is completely opened up right in front of him with Fritz struggling and some of the other guys in that quarter. Shapovalov already dropping a set over a couple of day match. Yeah. Casper Ruud struggling, dropping a set. I really like the way Sinner looks, and even though he's never made it through to a semi in a Grand Slam, this feels like the time for him.
Well, I would agree with you there. Remember, he's the only guy among, well, Roger and Rafa, the other two, but he's only one of three players that has pushed Novak to five sets in the last 28 matches over the last 4 years. He's got the capability and the talent to break through. It's just a matter of time. And I think this is a great wide open opportunity in this field right now. We saw Tsitsipas go to five sets against Dominic Thiem. Thiem has not been the same since the injury, the wrist injury. He's struggled a lot. But to me right now, when you look at the other challenge you mentioned, so they allot 2 hours for the men's matches, which are three sets. And on grass, they go much faster than they do on clay. You don't have those 4.5 hour marathons. But here's the problem. You wind up with a five set match. It's still going to go 3+ hours. And so now you're sitting there thinking, okay, I'm going to play at 2 o'clock local time in Britain. And then next thing you know, it gets pushed to 4:30. The rain comes in. I mean, you look at it from last night to this morning. They were supposed to start at 11 o'clock local time. Some of the matches didn't get started until what amounted to about about 2:30 in the afternoon. So many of the matches got pushed. It's not easy. And I wish, you know, it rains there. It feels like it rains every day in London. To me, the outer courts at some point in time, you got to sit there and say, hey, we make a ton of money here. Maybe we should consider covering the courts and let the tournament play out in a normal, succinct order.
They love their strawberries and cream and their tradition. They still make everybody wear all white. You know, it's not 1876 anymore, but apparently that's still what they have to do at the All England Club there across the pond. I think you were completely right, though, that it unfairly advantages the top-seeded players. And if there are guys that are still men or women, depending on the draw you're looking at, who are still plus money in some of these quarter bets, you can still find an edge there. So that was the big takeaway I had on the men's side. And the one big near upset we had, Dominic Thiem, this was on the top half of the draw. He takes Stefanos Tsitsipas to a match tiebreak, which is the new rule now at Wimbledon. It has been for the past couple of years. Tsitsipas wins 10-8, but you come away from that match thinking, I would never put my hard-earned money on Tsitsipas in almost any situation because he looked so mentally fragile and was very fortunate to get away with that win today.
He really is. And the reality of it is there's certain players like Nick Kyrgios, incredible talent. I would never bet on him. Too many of these players are just absolutely enigmas in terms of their consistency. You're not sure what they're going to give you on a day-to-day basis. That's why when you looked at the big three, they were just so consistent compared to some of the other people. One other thing I want to point out right now, like when you look at some of these women's matches, men's matches as well, don't be afraid of some of these numbers in the first couple of rounds. Like, for example, today I think it was Paula Badosa against Allison Risk Armitage. Mm-hmm. She was like minus $3. You know what? Allison Risk, Ben, do you know the last time she won a match?
It had to have been a while.
January 6th.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I see her in the first round of every main draw, and it's usually like, well, that's a $4 or $5 favorite against her, and she goes down.
To me, she should be staying. A hotel night should be one night stays, right? She doesn't even have to worry about the second leg of the tournament. She's now, including today, she's lost 10 matches in a row. I mean, she has exited 10 consecutive tournaments in the first round.
It's unbelievable. You get some of these lower prices. We saw today with Keys. I know, you know, almost $5 sounds like an absurd price. Madison Keys might as well have been playing me out there. She wins, what, 6-love, 6-3? You see some of these matchups. Yep. You and I were talking about them in the early rounds. Because the payouts at Wimbledon, U.S. Open, French and Australian are greater than when you win some of these WTA 250-level tournaments, the players are much more engaged. They're locked in. You don't see some of the upsets that you do in some of the smaller tournaments. This is where you take advantage of these, some of the bets early stages. There's some great opportunities there.
Absolutely right. And yeah, the prestige of Wimbledon means that, well, yes, the court services are faster. You can occasionally run into, like on the men's side, a serve bot who just has a day. You don't see it as often on the women's side. You don't see the huge giant killing type upsets. And it's a big reason why people always want to look at the data, right? And the analytics. Well, you just don't have that on the grass court. It's a very truncated season. A lot of players elect to just not even play any of the warm-up tournaments. Maybe they play one in the buildup. I never try to lean too much on the stats. Maybe if it's the career long, just you know, in a matchup that's a pick 'em, and I want to see who generally is a better player on grass. But it's why my pick to win this at about 5.5 to 1 was Aryna Sabalenka on the women's side.
It's great.
No
pick.
No recent data whatsoever, but she wasn't allowed to play at Wimbledon last year because of the Russian Belarusian ban,
which I thought was ridiculous, by the way. I
completely agree. She didn't play last year. Her game completely turned around at the U.S. Open last year when she made the semifinal run. She was the worst server on tour in regard to double fault percentage. Finally figured that out, makes a WTA finals run, comes out, makes her breakthrough and a Grand Slam, wins the Australian Open. On her worst surface at Roland Garros, makes it to a semi and probably should have been in the final without a pretty colossal mental gaffe against Karolina Muchova. And people still don't want to give her any respect because, oh, it's a tough bottom quarter and there's a lot of good players in there. I'm sorry, with her serve, as long as she has figured out the double faults,
she has.
Yeah. She is very, very difficult to break. And I love that number as a third favorite behind the defending champion who has come out. And Elena Rybakina has had illnesses. She hasn't played much. She struggled to win her first round match. I don't know why Sabalenka was longer in the odds board than Rybakina.
I would agree with you there. And I also look at why is Swiatek such a favorite? She's never gotten past the fourth round at Wimbledon. I just don't understand sometimes the way the odds are stacked. We'll get into some more of the matchups later on in terms of I'll give you some plays. But I'm going to tell you real quickly, one for tomorrow. You can get it probably at about a minus 180 to 190. Anna Bogdan against Alicia Parks, the young American, big-time server. But you talked about double faults. Holy cow, Ben. I looked at her last. She had a three-stretch match. Three matches in a row where she had like 36 double faults. Cool. I mean, that's the equivalent of three service games per match that you're giving away on
it's
double
crazy.
Faults. And Bogdan, I watched her against Ludmila Samsonov, and she could really handle her power. So I think against Park, she should have no problem. We'll get into some more of these matches.
Yeah, no doubt.
But you brought up a great point. On the men's side, you take a player like Yuri Vesely who knocks out Sebastian Korda. He can serve. He's a lefty. He can serve. So he becomes tough on a surface like this. So in the women's side, though, Sabalenka, when you're putting up a second serve, she's going to bury it. You can break serve much easier. That's why I like the opportunity. The set is not over when you get broken. There's always opportunities there. And there's some more. Well, you kind of have to parlay some of these because the numbers are so big. But don't be afraid of it. This is where you can make a ton of money in the early stages. I saw, Lauren Davis gave Pegula a tough match in the first round, but Pegula bagels her. It was like 6-2, excuse me, in the first set. You're going to have a set where they dominate. They're just better players, and they are hungry. This is where you make your mark. You can win all the WTA 250s, 500s, and 1,000.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who you are.
Yeah, and you can also get a really good gauge early in tournaments. How do players, like you mentioned the Samsonova match, that was a 6-6 match. How do players handle the big moments? And a lot of times, like not all 6-6 matches are created equally. It's about playing the pressure moments. And Djokovic wins with two sets that went, one was 7-5, one was 7-6. Yet Jordan Thompson never had a chance in that match. So the scorelines can often be deceiving because of how the surface is faster and slicker and there are fewer breaks of serve. We will have some more individual matches that we like for the card on Thursday. But up next, dead or alive here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. Dustin, you still alive back there? We talked tennis for 10 minutes. You all good? Did you follow along with that?
Yeah, there were some names I wrote down. I don't think any of them are American, though. Prefer to back America, but If you're saying we can win money by not doing it, I guess we'll have to.
It's so funny Dustin brings it up, Amal, because I was doing a spot on – it was Monday night, so heading into July 4th, and I was asked by – I think it was Holden Kushner here on VSiN Tonight, hey, what Americans – like, what 4th of July American can I bet? And I'm like, you realize this is Wimbledon. This is not like a hot dog contest. I gave out Christopher Eubanks because I genuinely liked him, and he did win in four sets today, which was nice to see. But I'm like, hey, you guys realize, like, Americans are a very small piece of the pie in international tennis.
Yeah, Eubanks just won the tournament in Mallorca, ATP 250, yeah. And just beat Thiago Monteiro, a Brazilian clay court special. So a good matchup for him in the first round.
No doubt. Anyway, Dustin's like, wait, we're not doing more tennis. We got to wait till the very end.
I just
our bets. I know. I can see
the backstory of how each of you got into tennis. I'm very curious about that.
I mean, I played all through junior, so that was the sport, like the first sport I loved and played. And so you kind of feel like, as much as it is not at all similar to what these pros are at, like mentally, the mental state of tennis is such a fascinating thing that can be applied further down into juniors. And so just some of that, the mechanical stuff, I've always been enamored with it. And then you watch these guys on tour and you're like, I could not even win a point, even though I felt pretty good as a junior. So that you realize the gap, but I've still always really been into it from the betting and viewing perspective.
I didn't play tennis, but to me, the thing is, it's the one sport, for example, let's say you've got an NFL matchup and a team is a 7-point favorite at home, Kansas City against Detroit. The chances that the Lions win the game outright, probably not that strong. They could cover the 7 very easily, but they're probably going to be plus 250 to 270 on the money line. That's a much harder victory than, say, in a women's match of a player being a 250 dog. Some of these matchups, I'm telling you right now, their odds, they're clueless on. The 250 should not be the price. They should be a pick them one way or the other. There should be certain other matchups. For example, you saw in the first round, they were minus, you know, Keys today was minus 450. She should have been about minus $9. And there's some of these matchups, I don't know why, but they seem to be far off on the numbers, in my opinion, and you can take advantage of it. And so we'll talk about it. You'll see some of the upsets on the women's side, even on the men's side today. Yuri Vesely beat Sebastian Korda. Korda, where's he been? I haven't even seen him play anything. He's against a monster left-hander server. Lefty's got a huge advantage. Dustin, you could have gotten plus $4 on him. Vesely wins in four sets.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. I'm left-handed, so I was, you know, people always say, oh, you have a big advantage when you play tennis because it's a different spin. It's harder to pick up.
Yeah.
Just real quick to that point, let's say Carolina was on the road playing Kansas City. They're about a $4 underdog on the money line. If you're in the Survivor contest at Circa, everybody's probably got Kansas City that week. And even if the Chiefs eke out a win, they're still probably getting the win. Here, some of these matches, as soon as you get into it halfway through, you're like, if you bet the other side, you're like, dude, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Have you ever done, now what is becoming popular are these Survivor contests for these Grand Slams.
I didn't know
which
that.
Which is a fascinating handicap, right? Because you have to win 7 rounds to win. So you're not blowing, you know, an Arena Sabalenka in round one. You're trying to find somebody who you aren't as bullish on for the whole tournament, but you think they win in round one. That's something I haven't done. I want to. It's fascinating though.
Well, I just take Novak and call it a day.
Well, no, you can't.
You can only use him once.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Survivor.
Survivor. Just like the Circa.
Oh, that's
contest.
Actually really cool.
It's hard.
Let me guess. We don't have it available here in Nevada.
No. Shocker. You're going to be shocked to hear that we do not. So anyway. Yeah.
Let's move on from it. That's depressing.
We can't.
Now I'm always like, I think I want to go somewhere where that's offered.
It's amazing.
You just pick an upset in the first round, then you have to.
You don't even have to pick an upset.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess just someone you think that's not going to advance far. And
sure.
Their bracket. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It doesn't recede.
No, you just pick it. It's like the NFL Survivor, right? You pick a team. Like, if you're fortunate enough, you get a team like that Lions team or the Browns team that went 0-for, you have an opportunity to bet against one of those types of players or scenarios. You take it.
Like, the strategy, honestly, would be you could pick all guys in Djokovic's half leading into a semis because you know Djokovic will win anyway. And then you take Alcaraz in the semi
and then you take Joker at the end.
Djokovic in the final. That's how you would play that out.
Yeah,
now,
you work backwards on this one.
Exactly. Yeah. Not all tournaments are created equal, but that's how it would be for this. All right, dead or alive. I have not been initiated into this game, Dustin. So so shall we play dead or alive here? We've got some good context.
It's a really difficult premise, Ben. I'm going to lay out a bet for you, and you're going to tell me if that ticket right now is dead or alive in your eyes. So let's begin in the NFL, where I think we all pretty much agree the NFC South is a bit of a cluster, bit of a mess, not really sure what to expect from a few of those teams. Right now, the Carolina Panthers with rookie quarterback Bryce Young are plus 210 to make the playoffs. Amal, is that ticket dead or alive?
Very much alive because they can win the division. What are their division odds?
Probably close to that. I'll pull it up here.
Because it would actually be probably similar because that's the only way I think they're getting in.
Yeah.
Division odds are 4-1.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Saints +120. Falcons a little over 2-1. Panthers 4-1. Bucks 8-1.
Very much alive.
And if we believe this, that is likely to be a one team division that gets into the postseason. I'm not one of those who want to, who want to take the lesser money just to give myself the insurance, so to speak, or more opportunities, more outs. I would just take the flyer on the 4-1 to win the division.
I'm with you on that one for sure. That's why I was asking what the division odds were, because to me, that's their best shot of getting in. Let's say Dallas, Philly are two teams, and then you've got what, seven teams get in, right? So you've got to add two more teams. Maybe Seattle. I'm not as big of a believer in the Seahawks as other people are. But, man, you guys, when you look at the NFC outside of the top three teams, this is an awful conference. Minnesota had a great year last year. I think they dropped back a little bit. But I think you might get two teams from the north.
I was going to point out, we had a couple teams make the playoffs with 9 wins last year. And that was the Giants and the Seahawks. Then the team who won the South had 8 wins in Tampa Bay. So I don't think it's out of the question that they could win without winning the division.
It's not out of the question. It's just we all feel like that division will beat itself up, and could a 9-win team win that division itself? It wouldn't surprise me at all.
I agree with Ben though. I think if you're going to take Carolina and make the postseason, you go with the 4-1 to win the division.
Yeah, that makes more sense. All right, next ticket here. College football national champion Florida State is currently 18-1.
Oh,
Ben?
Yeah. Oh, that is very much alive. You bring in probably the fifth best receiving group. I could argue that's a fifth best receiving group in the country. A couple of really top transfer targets that Florida State brought in this year. If you're the Seminoles, you already have the piece of quarterback in Jordan Travis as a legitimate Heisman candidate. Throws for 24 touchdowns, only 5 picks last year, but you needed the pieces around him. And I loved getting a Jaheim Bell from South Carolina, a really big target for him over the middle as a tight end. Keon Coleman, the wide receiver from Michigan State, who was top 10 in receiving a year ago. I think it really complements their offense nicely, Amal. And are we at the stage where we are really worried about Clemson at this point as their co-favorites right now in the ACC? I don't view them the same as I used to view Dabo Swinney's team from a couple years ago.
Well, you mentioned it. And one name I think that needs to be mentioned is Johnny Wilson. He's an absolute monster. I mean, I don't know if anybody can match up with him. You mentioned Jordan Travis. I don't know where you guys come out on him. I have Jordan Travis as arguably the fourth best player in college football. Maybe fifth. Yeah. I'll go Caleb Williams, Brock Bowers, Marvin Harrison, Jordan Travis, or Dallas Turner. Those are the five guys I would go with.
That's a completely fair list because you think about the multi-position, like just the multi-versatile skill set that he brings, and now you're adding in a receiving core that's better than he's ever had. Finally, it seemed like he really turned the corner last year as well, and assuming health and the schedule that's out there in a weaker ACC, it's very much a path that's open for them.
So here's why I would bet Florida State to make the playoffs. I wouldn't necessarily bet them to win the national title. Their season's going to be determined in September. They've got the game against LSU. Now, that game's in Orlando, I believe. Is that correct? I know it's a neutral site. But I think it's in Orlando. Thank God LSU. Does LSU actually getting passports to leave the state? No, these idiots never play any games outside of the state of Louisiana. They think they're great because they got to play Oklahoma in the dome. They got walloped by Alabama when they played in the dome. They got to play Ohio State, and they got to play Clemson all 70 miles from campus.
I low-key am into LSU, not to take us off the conversation about Florida State. No. I think they're totally under the radar. If they can get through this Florida State game, but even if they lose
game is in Orlando, by the way.
Oh yeah, if they can get through this Florida State game and win. But even if they lose, because it's a challenging opponent to open the year and they have the rest of the season to make up for it, there's a chance they could still be a playoff team.
First of all, Florida State, you're going to find out if they're in or not. Ben, the only problem with Florida State is they've got to go to Death Valley.
Right. That's what their season pretty much comes down to. Yeah.
I don't know how much time you want to give me on this one, if we can go into the next one, but I'm going to tell you right now, you better get some barbecue sauce for this guy because he's about to get roasted.
I don't know. That's a great tease. You make these things personal.
It's not personal. Jaden Daniels is terrible.
They return so many other pieces, and I am not convinced yet I'm not convinced yet Alabama and Georgia are what they've been the last couple of years. I'm not convinced.
We'll talk about that.
Dustin seems like a guy who loves impersonating Ed Orgeron. Like, you look at Dustin and you go, now that's a guy who does.
Here's my issue with him. He thinks I don't like him. I like him, and he thinks it's personal. I just don't like Jaden Daniels as a starting quarterback.
We'll elaborate on that topic. Hour number two of Sharp Money here on VSiN continues right after this.